Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side.
Good morning, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of On the Fin Side with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, finfanatic.com and the Fan Sided Network. I'm Brian Kat NFL on Twitter. Paul is fanatic underscore pick. The Dolphins travel to London to face the Jaguars, the 0-5 Jacksonville Jaguars. Not only 0-5, but have lost 20 games in a row. When we did, think about this. We remember our first win victory of the season last year against the Jaguars on Thursday Night Football. The Jaguars have not won a game since then. They have not won a game in over one full calendar year. So I've got to tell you, Paul, I am terrified to watch this game because, to me, this is where the Dolphins either turn their season around and start to string together a couple of wins, which they have done in the past. That's what they did last year after a 1-3 start, or they absolutely hit rock bottom.
Yeah, and unfortunately, given the fact that the Dolphins coaching has been a huge issue at this point and hasn't seemed to recognize that it's been a huge issue at this point, it's tough to say that this is the week that they realize and suddenly call a good game plan. We suddenly see the amoeba defense. We suddenly, you know, see Miami open it up over the top. But this is a team that you might be able to get away with it with. And it'll be interesting to see if Tua comes out firing at some of the receivers that Jacoby Brissett just didn't even see in this one. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I obviously the coaching hasn't done a great job this year, to say the least. I'll also say, too, against the Bucs last week, I didn't have a problem with the game plans on either side of the ball. I mean, look, I had a huge problem when the Dolphins against the Colts and against the Raiders basically play inside this box and don't throw the ball downfield until they absolutely have to. Then it's successful, and then they stop doing it the following game. I've got a big problem with that. Against the Bucs, I think they were taking a few more shots, and I think it was really smart for them to come out and start working the passing game through Myles Gaskin. And it also showed, too, the foolishness of one week, the Dolphins against the Raiders and against the Colts, try to run the offense through Malcolm Brown. And then against the Bucs, Malcolm Brown doesn't even play. It just screams of, we're just throwing crap against a wall and seeing what sticks.
It does. And just to put Malcolm Brown into perspective, Malcolm Brown has, let's see here, 25 carries for 91 yards on the season.
3.6 yards a carry.
Yep. Trevor Lawrence has 24 attempts for 110 yards and 4.6 yards per carry.
I mean, and it's not even a whole heck of a lot from a quarterback. That's only 22 yards a game. from a quarterback, and it's more than Malcolm Brown.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's lack of usage in the running game, period, for most folks, but regardless, it's still, you know, a full yard further per carry from Trevor Lawrence than we're getting from Malcolm Brown right now.
You bet.
Or a big smash back.
Right. And look, keep Miles Gaskin. And a big reason Miles Gaskin hasn't been on the field as much as we wanted is he's a terrible blocker. But you've got to find ways around that. You can't have him isolated one-on-one with defenders, or even when he's chipping, he hasn't.
I don't feel like Malcolm Brown's a great blocker either. He's just bigger.
That's accurate. Yeah. And that's why Gaskin needs to be on the field. At least, yes. If I'd rather have somebody who's good in the passing game, receiving wise, like Miles Gaskin, and somebody who's not existent in the receiving game like Malcolm Brown, even if Brown is a little bit more of a, even if he's a little bit better blocker. But also too, Paul, and this is where I point up at the front office too. I'll say it again. When you've got Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, which the Dolphins have had over the last month, and they're going to, by all reports, Tua is going to start this game, barring a setback, and I don't see any setback that can happen right now. When you have Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, when you have the worst running back room in the NFL, and when you have the worst offensive line in the NFL, I struggle at that point to say, well, you should call a better game. No, to me, it's a talent issue. And then the coaching staff makes it worse.
That's where I struggle to agree with you on that, because yes, bad talent can make you have to coach inside a box, but coaching inside a box can make your talent look bad. I mean, Savon Ahmed, throughout the preseason, they moved him all over the formation, and he was an absolute weapon down the field, in the short area, occasionally out of the backfield, even with Miles Gaskin on the field. And then they get to the regular season, they're like, nah. You know, it's when they've been losing games and they start pushing the ball downfield when the other team knows that they're going to do that, with Devontae Parker, who I know is not playing this week, Mike Gesicki, Albert Wilson, Mac Hollins, those guys were catching routes down the field for 20, 25-yard gains at a clip. And you just get away from it other than when the games are out of reach. To me, it's not fully a talent issue. It's a coaching issue. When it takes you 5 weeks to see what we all saw before the season about Austin Jackson and Liam Eichenberg, when you still haven't seen it with Jesse Davis and Robert Hunt, you're trying to outsmart everybody and looking like an idiot when you do.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think the front office and the coaching gaffes go hand in hand. There's no doubt about that. And yeah, I mean, look, and Jesse Davis is going to be starting at right tackle again. He got Tua hurt in week two. How egregiously he got him hurt on a 4th-and-2 when the Bills were up 7-0 on one of the biggest plays of the game. Jaylen Waddle's open right off the snap. Tua can't get him the ball because AJ Epenesa beat Jesse Davis and had his helmet in his ribs in 1.7 seconds. And I don't get it on there. And look, last week, I'm excited about Liam Eichenberg. You know, based on what I saw last week, he wasn't unreal at left tackle, but he played a good game. I mean, the first play of the game, or one of the first passes, with that 22-yarder to Preston Williams, he fell off his block. Jacoby Brissett had to break the pocket. That was a play that actually turned out to be a good one and a big one. But the rest of the game, I thought he was solid at left tackle. And that's one thing to keep our eye on here for the rest of the year, because that's a huge win for the offensive line if we can say Liam Eichenberg on a rookie contract is even a decent left tackle.
Yeah, no, I everything I've seen of Liam Eichenberg, both in college, in the preseason, in the regular season, I really like him at tackle, and I actually really like him at left tackle. It's something that I wish the Dolphins had seen a little bit sooner, and I wish Robert Hunt was still out on the right side, because I can't imagine that Robert Hunt wouldn't have at least tried to slap AJ Epenesa Just slap him to slow him down for, you know, a half a second at that point. Anything. Like, jump out there. Make him go around you if you have to, if you're not going to hit him. Like, anything. Anything at all to slow him down so he just doesn't get a free run at your quarterback. And that's, you know, some of that was blocking scheme-wise, too, because there was no one accounting for that blitz, and we started to see that blitz coming more and more until the Dolphins started picking it up. You know, I don't care if Myles Gaskin's a poor blocker. Send him out there to get run over, which is at least going to slow him down. You know, maybe he'll trip over him after he bowls over him. Like, something, anything.
Or send him on those wheel, that wheel route that led to that touchdown. How hard is that? I mean, I say it over and over again. Football's not that hard, okay? And if you, in any circumstance, if you were a coach in the NFL and you don't understand you need to throw the ball downfield to be successful, you don't get it. And the good news on this, though, is that the Dolphins, you know, according to all practice reports, were drilling it into Tua's head to get the ball downfield to be aggressive. And we saw some of that in the Patriots game. We saw that sideline 30-yard pass to Devontae Parker. We saw that willingness to throw the ball up like Ryan Fitzpatrick did when Jalen Waddle came down with a 30-yard catch. That's what we're hoping to see more, because when you do that, you can start loosening the field up a little bit more, and that's what we're hoping to get back here with Tua. But, Paul, before we get too far off on that too, is looking at the schedule, and again, this is where you're one game at a time. But look, I don't play for the Dolphins.
The score is 0-0.
Yeah, the score is hey, you can't count victories ahead of time. No, listen.
They can't. We can.
We can't. Thank you. I can look as far ahead as I want. So here's what I'm going to do. Okay, you look at this game against the Jaguars. Dolphins are favored by 3 here, and if they don't win this game, nothing else in the rest of the year seems even worth talking about. Falling to 1-5, they basically have to run the table the rest of the way. I think we can all agree that probably wouldn't happen if they don't turn it around in this game. If you win this game, you get to 2-4. Next week, you play the Falcons at home. Dolphins should be favored if they win this game by a couple of points too, and get to 3-4. Then the narrative starts to shift to the Dolphins are 3-0 with Tua and 0-4 with Jacoby Brissett. And not only 3-0 with Tua this year, but 9-3 with Tua as starting quarterback. Is some of that exaggerated based on the record? Yes, they've haven't exactly had a murderer's row schedule when Tua's played. But then that's where things start to change. So if the Dolphins are 3-4, then you look at the next 3 games. You've got at Buffalo, which is probably the hardest task you can have for anyone in the NFL, the Texans at home, and then the Ravens on Thursday Night Football at home for Miami. The Dolphins have to win. They've got to beat the Texans in the middle there, or else, again, none of this is really worth talking about. In addition to that, they've got to pull an upset against the Bills or against the Ravens. If they did that, now after 10 games, the Dolphins are 5-5 with not too hard of a schedule the rest of the way. That's the optimistic viewpoint on this, and it's got to start with the Jaguars game and the Dolphins winning and winning, I'd say, convincingly. On the other hand, based on how the Dolphins have played over the last month, they are 31st in offense, 30th in defense, 30th in passing offense, and 32nd in rushing offense. They're also allowing 5.3 yards a carry to opposing starting running backs. So if the Dolphins can get on the right track here, they can string some wins together. If they don't here, I mean, you want to talk about rock bottom. I may need an extra day before we do the show again, because I'm just not going to know what to say.
Well, and Cap just said something in our chat about, and this goes with the scheme thing, this goes with the coaching thing, and it goes with the offense. Hearing each week we took what the defense gave us. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Like, you look back when they were in a couple of games this year and Gaskin was averaging 5 yards a carry and you just stopped him at like 7 or 8 carries. You look back at games where they were throwing these little checkdowns, meanwhile wide receivers are just running around deep and wide open and you didn't throw it to him. You freaking like go through it and you're like, you really didn't take what the defense gave you. You went right into what they wanted you to do. Like, oh no, you're averaging 5 yards a carry. I hope they stop doing that. And you did. Like, oh no, those guys are running deep, wide open. Who's supposed to have them? Eh, doesn't matter. They're not going to throw those guys anyway. Just, you know, like, it's stupid to say that when any even casual fan watching the game can see that you didn't.
Well, they didn't. Defensively, I agree with you. Defensively, this is how I view just kind of the sequence of the game. The Dolphins can't move the ball. They go three and out, three and out, three and out. The Dolphins can't stop the run on defense. And then eventually that trickles into the secondary. That's how I look at how this works here. I mean, let's keep in mind that let's just look at the last two games against the Colts. With 3 minutes left in the first half, the Colts had 35 yards of offense and no points on the board. The Dolphins in 8 of 9 drives had fewer than 9 yards on offense for that drive. Then against the Bucs, yeah, I know the Bucs overall just took the Dolphins defense to the woodshed. I get it. You know, halfway through the third quarter, the Bucs had 17 points on the board. I mean, and I go back to personnel with the Dolphins defense because last year they were middle of the pack in stopping the run. And if you take out the first couple of games, they were good stopping the run once Raekwon Davis stepped up and played a major role. So this year they get rid of Shaq Lawson. They trade him for Bernardrick McKinney, who they then cut. So they don't have that sturdy defensive end or inside linebacker. And they have an undersized linebacker group. Raekwon Davis has been hurt. What I'm seeing this year, Paul, that I didn't see last year, is you see running backs and not very good running backs like Leonard Fournette and Peyton Barber get 5 yards into the hole before they're touched.
Yeah, I'll give you that on the defensive side. My comments were more about finishing up the offense. But no, I absolutely agree with you. The defense, it's there are a lot of
times. I totally misheard you on that.
Yeah, so I was going to say.
My apologies.
That's quite all right. It was about the offense not taking what the defense gives them and then, you know, coming out after the fact and going like, well, we took what the defense gave us. Like, and it's the stupidest thing ever. Like, you know, Myles Gaskin having 5 yards of carry. And the coach is getting away from it after like 7-8 carries and going, well, we took what the defense gave us. No, you didn't. Or all these receivers streaking deep and they're hitting guys at the line of scrimmage. You did not take what the defense gave you. Sorry. But to your points there.
Yeah. And also too, Paul.
Yeah.
I hate that quote. We take what the defense gives us. You didn't sign Will Fuller and Jaylen Waddle, and I know Fuller's out. He's going to be out for a few more games. But you didn't arrange this receiving room to not dictate matchups. That is what kills me, is that you look at the beginning of the Colts game. You had Devontae Parker. You had Jaylen Waddle. You had Will Fuller. You had Mike Gesicki. Instead of putting all four of those guys out on the field, Brian Flores brags after the game that they wanted to be methodical when they came out. Like, where is the Brian Flores from the last 2 years who is, running fake punts and kicking 57-yard field goals and kicking onside kicks? Where did this spineless coach come from?
I don't know. It's disappointing because one of the things I loved about Brian Flores was the fire and the fight and the effort and the lack of quit. You know, maybe he needs to start sending his coaching staff and himself to the POW wall or whatever it is that out there. And
The makes takes no talent walls.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, maybe they can get there a little early and set that up in London. But I mean, I will say this though. I will say, look, 5 games down, 12 to go. And this Dolphins team started off 0-7 in 2019. They finished 5-4. They started off 1-3 last year. And over the next, almost 3 months of football, or over 3 months of football, between September 30th and January 2nd, they lost 2 games. So there, it seems like this team has been able over the last 2 years, when their back is really against the wall and they need to fight their way toward respectability, they do it. That's what's happened in some way over the last 2 years. But this year, again, feels a little bit different. It feels like this was supposed to be a playoff year for the Dolphins and not even competitive for the most part over the last month.
Yeah, the talent is there to do so. I mean, the talent is there to be a playoff team. I mean, it's not a perfect roster, but it's the talent is on this team. That's why it hurts us all so much to see them play like this. That's why it's frustrating to see some of the stupidity. I mean, I can't ever remember in the last few years watching a game and thinking a play call was so horrific that a coordinator should be fired absolutely on the spot. And that's what I saw in you know, the Raiders game, looking back at that safety play to Waddle. You know, like, it's, or the blocking, I still feel like there was an issue with the blocking scheme itself on the AJ Epenesa sack. And those are huge season-changing plays. And Miami's giving those to other teams and not taking them for themselves.
See, and that's where I disagree. I don't think that this is a talented roster. I'm not convinced Tua is the guy. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. I think the running back room is the worst in the league. I think the offensive line is the worst in the league, both on protection and talent. And I think they can't stop the run largely because of their undersized linebacker group. Those are a lot of gaping holes in the team. And I look at those things and think, what are you going to call? You know, I think you should throw the ball downfield more, but I don't know what you do when you can't stop the run and you're allowing 5-6 yards a carry to opposing starting running backs. And then offensively, you can't run the ball. You abandon the running game from the beginning of the game. You can't block the people ahead of you. And that play on AJ Epenesa, I don't know what you do except get another right tackle, because off the snap, Jesse Davis is immediately whipped in a second, less than a second, you know? So I don't know. It's certainly both things. I'll grant you that, front office and talent, but I think the talent is the first domino that falls, to be quite honest with you.
There are holes in the talent, don't get me wrong. And I do agree with you that I don't know if Tua is the answer or not yet. Like, I'm just not there yet. We haven't had the opportunity. But you look at the talent that they have at the receiver position, even if it hasn't been utilized. I don't hate Miles Gaskin and Savon Ahmed. I would have liked somebody else in that mix with those guys. The Malcolm Brown thing just felt like a waste. But again, that feels like a Flores pick of like, ooh, this guy looks like he could be a thumper up the middle on a couple of plays. Let's give him that shot. He shouldn't have made it in the preseason. He shouldn't have. Like,
right. And looking at the running backs too is, you know, if the Dolphins were able to sign a Melvin Gordon last year, if they were able to land, you know, Najee Harris won the first round, but if they were able to trade back up for him or draft Javonte Williams, that could be your number one back. Then Miles Gaskin's your number two guy who can be used in the passing game. But it's shocking to me that it took him 2 quarters to figure out this year that Gaskin can't be on the field as much because he can't block. Well, then running back should have been a higher priority for you. That's what goes back here to the front office. But
and here's the thing before we move on from that. With Gaskin and Ahmed, even if they can't block great, if you start having them chip somebody and then screen it to them a few times, that defender that gets chipped is going to start staying with them and doing that blocking job for them. There are ways around that, and you shouldn't be at the NFL level not understanding how football works at that point. Like, it's you know, you've got these free blitzers coming. Guess what? That screen game, which Ahmed and Gaskin excel at, slows down defensive lines. It's you can slow the whole defensive line instead of just the one guy hitting him if you utilize what they're good at, and they don't most of the time. They started to a little bit last week with Gaskin, but God, you could do so many fun things with this group. You could do so many fun things with the receivers, and you just flip two guys on the offensive line and make the one that goes inside have to fight for his job with guys like Kinley and Jones, and your line is at least okay. Like,
I agree with you there.
And now your offense works, and it puts your defense in an advantageous position and gets them off the field a little more.
Now, Miles Gaskin, too, caught, 10 passes last week and six of them in the first quarter. They started doing that last week, and it worked.
Then they got away from it.
And, yeah, they got away from it a little bit the rest of the game. And last year, it was the same thing. I think Miles Gaskin caught 5 passes in the first quarter. So, yes, that's a very effective thing. It shouldn't have taken the Dolphins that long to figure out, maybe we should have Miles Gaskin out on the field chipping and being out there on screen passes. It shouldn't have taken them all the way to last week to figure it out. A couple of comments here from chat. Ignatius Cheese says that he's in London here. Anything you want him in particular to yell at the coaching staff about?
Where do I start? If you see them doing something that works, Iggy, and they get away from it, please yell for them to go back to whatever it is. It's probably going to be the screen game. It's probably going to be running the ball or throwing it deep down the field. Any of those things.
Yes. And Grandizer tells me to stop defending the Jalen Waddle pick. What are you talking about? I wanted Penny Sewell.
Give me Parsons.
The number one thing I'm angry about, to be quite honest with you, is if this really does fall off the tracks, is the Dolphins stupidly trading back up from 12 to 6 to draft Jalen Waddle. I think Waddle's talented. I think he's fast. He was not the guy I wanted at 6, and I didn't want the trade up back to 6. So come on, Grandizer, step up. Pay attention. And thank you for the comments on the pillows. I did get 2 new ones here. I stacked. I might just stack them all the way up to the wall here.
You should just layer your entire wall with pillows like it's a padded room, the way the season's going.
Absolutely. Let's see here.
And thank you, Radically Centerist. I'm bummed as well about Parsons. He really would have been good and would have been dynamic for this defense and would have helped solve some of the things Kat was talking about before with the linebacker group. Or the pass rush, or whatever else you want to do with him, because he seems to be able to do it all on the Cowboys defense.
And again, Grandizer, so let's recap. I was not in favor of the Waddle pick. I wanted Sewell. I wasn't in favor of the trade up, and Grandizer needs to pay attention. So moving on, as far offensively here with the game, obviously, my big thing is that the Dolphins are going against the Jaguars' pass defense that on the season is allowing a combined quarterback rating of 115.5 and 73.5% completion rate. So this is a game here where, look, Tua practiced this week. He's good to go. He said his ribs are not 100% healthy, which isn't to be expected at this point. But when you look at playing the Falcons and the Jaguars the next 2 games, who have allowed 18 touchdowns and 2 interceptions on the year, no, Tua's got to hit the ground running here, not only to save the season, but also because he's going against 2 of the worst pass defenses in the NFL.
And he's also got to hit the ground running because Jesse Davis is still at right tackle.
Bazing, exactly right.
You set that up too good, Kat. Sorry.
Does Tua need to get mauled in this game for the coaching staff to realize that they need to put Robert Hunt back at right tackle?
I didn't realize it last time.
And Hunt's done fine at right guard. He's done fine at right guard. I thought it was better at right tackle. And Jesse Davis, the only time he played decent this year is when he played left guard against, I think, the Raiders. So who knows? One thing to watch out for in terms of matchups is watching the Jaguars games here, what I notice is that on first down, they typically don't have Josh Allen on the field. They like to keep him fresh so that when it gets into any passing situation, when it gets into second and 10, when it gets into any situation where they suspect the opposing quarterback is going to throw, that's when they put Josh Allen on the field to try to whip the outside tackle. And they play him against the left tackle. They play him against the right tackle. He is their most talented defensive player. And that's something to watch, because if you get Jesse Davis against Josh Allen repeatedly, and if the Jaguars are smart, they're going to try to isolate that matchup, that could cause some game-changing plays. And the Dolphins need to be aware of that, and they need to at least neutralize that matchup.
They do. You're talking about the Josh Allen one, correct? I was researching while I was talking.
Josh Allen, and you've got him. You got that matchup. On the inside, they use Roy Robertson Harrison Roy Robertson Harris should be back. This game, he's been out the last couple of games here, and he was their big ticket free agent signing from the Bears. You've got him. You've got DeJuan Smoot. You've got Adam Gotsis, all kind of in that same role. Not incredibly athletic guys, but pretty sturdy on the inside. It kind of explains why the Jaguars are allowing under 4 yards a carry to opposing running backs this year, doing a pretty good job there. And at the linebacker group, they're going to be without Miles Jack, which is big, because adds a lot of speed to the middle of their defense. And if the Dolphins are smart in this one here, they'll get Mike Gesicki and they'll get Miles Gaskin attacking the middle of that field, a lot of crossing routes too. I see a lot of opportunities, even with Devontae Parker and Will Fuller out, for the Dolphins to exploit in the passing game.
No, absolutely. And if you can get to the second level with Miles Jack out in the running game, or even in the screen game, you're going to be in position to succeed. I mean, I like Kalavon Chaisson, or I always butcher his name.
Yeah, Kalavon Chaisson in Josh Allen are kind of in that same role. They're fast. And if you get them one-on-one, they can beat you around the edge and come back through the back door and hit Tua if the Dolphins don't account for that. That's something big in this game. And Chaisson's getting a little bit better too. He had a nightmare of a rookie year. And Josh Allen had 10 sacks in his rookie year. He hasn't had a lot of success there, but yeah.
Yeah, but coming off the edge, if Miami hasn't figured out their blocking scheme to account for that blitz, those two both have a lot of speed. I mean, it's you've got to use that screen game in this one to open everything up for this offense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Grandizer also said at 18 he wanted Jamin Davis from Kentucky instead of Jalen Phillips. Well, Phillips is better, has played better. Jamin Davis doesn't even play. Come on, man. Get it together. In the secondary, Jaguars traded CJ Henderson here a couple of weeks ago for Dan Arnold in a third round pick. And Henderson was playing horrifically for them. They also drafted Tyson Campbell in the second round, really to replace him. And Campbell was out last game, questionable to return this game, so should be playing hurt. My advice to the Dolphins in terms of matchups with the Jaguars defensive backs, stay away from Shaq Griffin. He's not a great player, but he's certainly the best one that they have.
Yeah, no. And I would be looking for Andrew Winger to try to throw it over the top against him. I know they had some success in the past. He tends to bite a little too much in the box and struggle with deep passes. And that's where, if you can send Waddle over the top and stop this just running your screen game through Waddle thing that Miami seems to be really into right now, you have a chance to really exploit that matchup for Mac Hollins. Or, you know, if Kirk Barrett can come to the roster, please, instead of Isaiah Ford, fingers crossed. You know, there you've got a lot of guys that can exploit Wingard, especially Gesicki, actually.
Yeah, I don't know why they're not at least giving Merritt a chance. Get somebody in there, you know, for a overall underachieving and hurt receiver group here. Get somebody in there that you can get isolated one-on-one and is hungry and is going to make some plays. I mean,
instead of just bringing up the Ford Focus every week.
Yeah. They're dragging him off the street. It's like, even when he was cut last time, he said, this guy is going to be back on the active roster somehow, some way. And he is. Mm-hmm. And he caught one pass for 3 yards last week.
Whoop-dee-dee. We can't even trade him away without getting him back on the roster. Like, yeah.
I don't know who Albert Wilson and Isaiah Ford are blackmailing to stay on this roster, but
I would rather have Albert Wilson than Isaiah Ford 10 times out of 10.
Yeah. Kyle Pitts was brought up in chat. Cap for Life just said he's got him on a buy in fantasy football.
Oh, you mean my other guy that wasn't Micah Parsons?
Well, actually, I'm very glad the Dolphins didn't stay at 3 and take him. Could you imagine how angry? And I'll tell you why. Not because of the talent, because he had 9 catches for 119 yards last week when the Falcons and Jets played. Looks like he's going to be a superstar. Could you imagine how frustrated we would be if the Dolphins had Gesicki and Kyle Pitts on the roster? And they've got Durham Smythe and Adam Shaheen out there in the first half.
I mean, I'd be upset.
And I'm not even exaggerating. I'm not making a joke. That's what would happen.
I would take the upset for this season, knowing, well, Gesicki would be gone next year. But knowing that, you know, if they really truly didn't utilize, like, the more talent that they get that they don't utilize, the more likely that there is to be a coaching change that we need. And if that were to happen, you'd suddenly see Miami turn into a fun team to watch down the stretch, because you know those interim coaches come in with something to prove. And if they start chucking the rock all over the yard to these guys and really set themselves up for whoever comes in next to have the talent there, hell yeah.
See, I'm very anti-interim coach. I don't see the point of it unless you're actually going to consider having
or offensive coordinator, or replace the offensive coordinator and suddenly start lighting it up and set up for the future.
Yeah, I mean, if you get an interim coach in, and again, too early for this, but just in general, I remember back in 2004 when Dave Wannstedt was fired with like 4 or 5 games left, and then Jim Bates came in. If you remember that,
mm-hmm.
And I think they were 3-1 to end the season. It was like, gosh, where's this team been all year? I was like, okay, I guess Jim Bates is going to be the coach next year. And no, he was fired immediately. It's like, what was the point of that?
He didn't even get an interview, if I remember correctly.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
I mean, at least Todd Bowles got an interview. At least, well, what's his face? Dan Campbell got an interview. Like, good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Grandizer said he wanted Creed Humphrey. He actually said Creedy Humphrey at 36 overall. So you lose any points there. But yeah, no, Creed Humphrey's been great, and I think every Dolphins fan wanted him. So welcome to the group, Grandizer. So let's see here. Phil Montgomery, I think this will be Waddle's week with Tua back and a very poor secondary. Yeah, it has to be, because he I mean, you look at last week, he was my Coke Bus Player of the Week. 2 catches for 31 yards, a drop, and one of the drops, that drop was dropped right into the hands of Jamel Dean. So, look, Jalen Waddle, it's time to step up. Look, we didn't draft a 5'9", 185-pound receiver so that he can ease into the lineup. And especially when you look around and you see Ja'Marr Chase on pace for 1,500 yards, Kyle Pitts doing what he did last week, 9 catches for 119 yards against the Falcons. So,
well, we'd utilize Jalen Waddle more effectively if Durham Smythe wasn't our downfield threat right now.
Well, Jalen Waddle did draw a pass interference penalty last week. How about a little bit more of that? I mean, it's good things happen when you throw the ball downfield. And
I did just think about what I said before about firing the offensive coordinators, and you're really putting like 3, 4, 5 families on the streets. How many offensive coordinators do we have right now? I've lost track at this point.
3 that we know of.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, and, two officially.
And there's a secret guy that calls plays behind them that sends them in on a card. Like,
yeah, it'd be funny if they fired all 3 offensive coordinators.
You know,
and brought in 3 more guys.
What might be the problem is every time we turn around, everybody thinks somebody else calls the plays. Maybe no one's calling plays at this point. And Jacoby Brissett was just like, let's do this. Like, maybe that's what happened. Because apparently nobody calls the plays and everybody calls the plays.
Yeah.
That sounds awful cultish to me.
Right. It's, again, and I go back to this too. And let me be clear, and I'll end with this here before I throw it to you for the last word. I am a Tua fan to the extreme the rest of the way. Because, look, I think the way the Dolphins have treated Tua and developed him has been an absolute joke. Think about it. They draft Tua. They put him in before he's ready. He, in the middle of a promising rookie year, two games after that Cardinals game, which was by far the best game of his career, they bench him in the fourth quarter against the Broncos when the game is in reach. Yeah, I know he played bad that game, but you don't do that. Then you bench him in the fourth quarter against the Raiders. Yeah, they won that game. They were 10-6 instead of 9-7. Still missed the playoffs. So what? Then he's not a team captain. They then try multiple times to trade for Deshaun Watson, even when he has 22 sexual assault charges against him.
24.
It's 24 now? No, I think it's 24. 22. Regardless.
Anything after, I mean, one or two is too much.
So. I mean, look, I wanted to, I'll say I wanted to over Herbert on draft day. I'm, as of right now, I'm badly wrong about that. But that doesn't mean the Dolphins didn't make things worse with Tua. You don't develop a quarterback this way. You don't not make him a team captain. You don't pull him from the lineup in the fourth quarter of games that are within reach to put in the guy that you yanked who was hot at the time. I mean, the way I look at this and the coaching staff as it stands right now, they don't know what they're doing. And I don't think they know enough to turn things around. And the Dolphins really wear it as a badge of honor that we don't care what you think. We're going to do what we think is right. Well, that's fine, except it always turns out wrong with this offensive staff. So anyway, Paul, there's your motivational close.
Boy, Kat, you should be a motivational speaker at this point. Like, <that's, laughs> and I'm not going to repeat what Grandy said in chat, but I would love if the Texans put what you said in chat as the reason he's not playing for the week. That would be amazing. And I know Kat's looking for it right now.
Aggrandizer, hey, let me finish with a good note here. With a good note with you. You said fix the offensive line, get your quarterback, and the Dolphins can't develop talent. 100% agree with you.
So, trying to be motivational here for everybody. I do think there's talent on this team. This is definitely a winnable game. I'm hoping Miami doesn't do what we've seen in the past where they play down to their level of talent. You know, Trevor Lawrence has 8 interceptions and 6 touchdowns on the year. Hopefully Miami's able to take advantage of it even without Xavier Howard on the field. And really, hopefully Miami gets into the screen game with their running backs and gets Waddle open all over the field, and this could turn into a fun game. Using Gesicki down the seam against Wingard is just a joke of a mismatch at this point. There are so many things Miami can do well, and it all starts with what Tua can do in his return tomorrow. Whether Tua was our guy or not, I mean, look, the picks that we wasted, maybe we could have traded up to go after the real best quarterback in that draft right now. But at this point, we didn't and we couldn't. And this was somebody that, Kat, you can vouch for this, I wanted when he was a fifth-round pick. So
yeah, but, Paul, you mentioned that last week, too. That wasn't an option. I mean,
I would have mortgaged so much that they couldn't say no, because those, you know, at this point, you're mortgaging Igbinoghene, Austin Jackson, you know, like, it's...
I agree, and I was on board with you of wanting to do it, too. Maybe not as much as you were, but the Dolphins could have offered 5 first-round picks, and the Bengals wouldn't have taken it. That's,
maybe. If they'd really put that effort in, like, instead of just, what do you want? And they're like, nothing. Go, I got an offer for you. I'll give you cash.
Like, still wouldn't have done it. They still would not have done it. I mean, you don't – when you have a clear cut number one overall pick for months, like Joe Burrow was, they're not moving off that pick. Yeah. It does. You can offer anything you want, because that's going to be the face of your franchise, the guy on all of your marketing materials. You trade down and you take an offensive tackle. That's good. That would get so bad. I understand what you're saying, and it probably would have ended up being a better move if they traded from 1 to 5, got first round picks, and took Justin Herbert in hindsight. But yeah, I mean, and it sucks that the Dolphins couldn't get in that position to get a Joe Burrow. But
yeah, no, but God, I hated the year that Burrow had that final year at LSU, because you know how bad I wanted him when he was still way under the radar. It's, you know, like, but it is what it is. I mean, I think the talent's there to move around on the offensive line and make this offensive line effective. And the talent is there on defense. It's, you know, people are like, oh, you can't cover the flat with the amoeba defense. You absolutely can. You can't rush the passer from the, you absolutely can. Like, just, you make it so that the opposing offense really can't tell who is going where, and you create a whole lot of confusion, which slows down an offense out of that amoeba defense. And they've got the guys to run it effectively, because they did last year. Like, that's the funniest part about it to me. Like, it's a whole lot more confusing that for an offense than you moving Jerome Baker out to cover a running back on the sideline and going like, wait, where'd the 55's the bike? Like, I mean, it's...
Yeah, overall, I agree with you on that. I mean, there are some... I agree with the argument of, well, if you're playing that amoeba defense or that dancing seven, whatever you want to call it, yeah, maybe you're not defending the flats as well. Maybe you are giving up more running lanes, but you're making it up in other areas. You're being more unpredictable. And I think that's what's starting to work against the Dolphins and has all year, is the lack of unpredictability. I mean, where's Andrew Van Ginkle flying off the edge like last year? Where's him moving around and playing inside linebacker on some certain looks and getting and slicing into the backfield? Why is Jerome Baker, who according to PFF is one of the best pass rush grades. Again, I can't tell you exactly what that constitutes, but where is he blitzing all the time? Like last year when he had 7 sacks chasing down Patrick Mahomes in the open field, you know? So yeah, they need to call better plays on defense too. Overall, I agree with you on that.
They need to call better plays on the football field at this point. Like defense, offense, special teams, like all of it.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Let's get to predictions here. And one player we haven't talked about that's probably the most important player in this game for the Jaguars is James Robinson, who is averaging 5.8 yards a carry on the year. The Dolphins on run defense averaging 5.32 yards a carry. That is the matchup that really, to me, is going to determine winning and losing this football game. Because if the Dolphins can step it up on run defense this week against James Robinson, do a respectable job, then I feel good that they're going to be able to put pressure on Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence has gotten better over recent weeks. Yeah, his stat line for the year doesn't look great, but against the Titans, you know, the 19 points they put on the board easily could have been 30. They were stopped inside the 5 twice. They were moving the ball, and Lawrence, the game is slowing down for him a lot. He can make plays with his feet, and overall, he's throwing wide receivers open a lot more. But he's also going to be without DJ Chark for the year. So even though the Dolphins aren't going to have Xavien Howard in this game, we should see Nick Needham out there. You're going to be seeing Laviska Shenault and Marvin Jones against presumably Byron Jones and Nick Needham. I still think the Dolphins will win that matchup. Nick Needham's had a really good season so far. And offensively, I think Tua comes out, throws for 260 yards or so, 2 touchdowns. Fan base starts getting a little bit more excited. I'm going to go 26-20 Dolphins.
I like that you brought up Robinson. He is their most effective weapon. And guess what? The way you neutralize a running back in the running game is you open it up early with your offense and get a lead right off the rip. And suddenly one of those leads where, you know, if they want to run the ball, they're doing your job for you. And if Miami can do that in this one, they're really setting themselves up well. I think they do have a very good chance. You know, Miles Jack is the leading tackler for Jacksonville. He won't be in this game, as we talked about. You know, DJ Chark, that's a huge loss for them. And really, I think this is a winnable game this week. I do think they do score. I think Miami does pick off Trevor Lawrence, even though he's gotten better, especially if you're forcing them to have to throw the ball to catch up a little bit. I'm going to go 27-17 Dolphins in this one.
So we both got the Dolphins winning, and gosh, they better, because what scares me is that every time I watch this team play this year over the last month, you think that we've hit the worst, and not so much. So things have got to change, and they got to change here starting this week. Thank you all for joining us here. We know it's not the easiest thing to do on Saturday morning when the team is 1-4, but we're going to be here right there with you. We love you guys. And we're going to be here Sunday night too. And there's going to be a lot of yelling if they lose and a little bit of celebration if they win. So that's going to do it for our breakdown of the Dolphins-Jaguars matchup here, taking place tomorrow morning in London. I'm Brian Catt, NFL. Paul is Fanatic_Pick. You can follow us on the Fin Side on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, finfanatic.com, the Fan Sided Network. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin Side.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.